What does Australia's next generation of young leaders have to say about the future of India-Australia relations in a post-COVID world? And how do Indian scholars, scientists, practitioners, and students factor in? You're listening to Shared Visions, the podcast that spotlights the Australian government's new Colombo plan and gets to the heart of these questions. Today, we speak with Sam Rowe, an entrepreneur and student of chemical engineering at Curtin University, and Raghunathan Rangaswamy, a professor of chemical engineering at IIT Madras, as well as the Dean of Global Engagement.
My name is Raghunathan Rangaswamy, and I'm a faculty in the Department of Chemical Engineering at IIT Madras. I'm a chemical engineer by training. I did my bachelor's at IIT Madras and then went on to get a PhD at Purdue University in the US. And then I worked in India as faculty and also in the US for several years as faculty before I decided to come back to IIT Madras. And I've been a faculty at IIT Madras for now 10 years. The way in which I came across this program is actually when Sam showed up at IIT Madras and then said wanted to work on fuel cells and wanted to work with me. That's how I got involved in this program.
Right. I'm Sam Pernrow. Originally, I studied chemical engineering at Curtin University of Western Australia, and that's when I applied for the NTP program, and I was lucky enough to be selected and offered a place at the Indian Institute of Technology Madras in Chennai. And as part of the program, we were given a list of professors and their areas of study, and one particular area of study that I was interested in was alternate energy. So I selected that. I contacted Professor Raghu and asked him if I could attend his lab. And I was very fortunate he said yes and introduced me to fuel cells and hydrogen technology. And so during my time there, I worked on a tubular PEM fuel cell, which is just a lightweight, low volume version of the general concept or design.
How long before coming to the NCP program in India did you kind of identify that interest? Was that something you always wanted to do, or is that you identified this lab in India and Professor Raghu that you specifically wanted to work with?
Sure. So alternate energy, and particularly batteries and fuel cells and transportable energy storage devices, were definitely something that I was interested in. But because of the nature of studying chemical engineering at Curtin University in Western Australia, we have a big mining and oil and gas background in Australia. So a lot of the units that I was exposed to was very much in that avenue of study. And oil and gas was not something that I wanted to spend a lot of time in. So when I got the opportunity to explore, which was merely just a side interest, I grabbed it. And that's when I jumped in with the project with Professor Raghu.
So you kind of touched on this already a little bit about alternate energy, and just, you know, obviously we all know about the immense potential that it holds for our future, and that, you know, specifically hydrogen technology and how it'll play a major role in the current climate change crisis. Personally, I have very little knowledge of, you know, the advent of this form of energy and why it's such a valuable asset in the climate change crisis. So if the both of you could kind of touch on how hydrogen technology is going to play that role and explain it to someone with very little knowledge, how would you go about doing that?
Okay. So first thing to understand is that fuel cells are energy conversion device. So they convert one form of energy to another. For example, chemical energy to electrical energy and so on. The connection to the environmental factors and so on, climate change, comes from the fact that you produce almost no carbon dioxide when you use a fuel cell technology at the point of use. So that's important to understand. So wherever you're using it, you're going to produce very little CO2 emissions. Now, sometimes people do say that you do produce CO2 when you actually produce hydrogen, but since it's centralized, you could control it much better. So think about producing CO2 through every vehicle that is flying. it's very difficult to control that. So if you have a hydrogen technology, that doesn't happen. However, while producing hydrogen itself, you could produce CO2, but that's centralized and you can minimize the effect of that. Of course, there are also completely green hydrogen production technologies where you avoid CO2 production in the whole life cycle of that technology. So that's the connection between this climate change and fuel cells.
Got it. Sam, do you want to add something?
Sure. I think a lot of people get caught up in the sort of battle between batteries and hydrogen technology. You'll see a lot about it in the news and media at the moment. But what people don't realize is they're actually, rather than competitive technologies, they work a lot better in unison. So there's different applications for different technologies. And one thing that we've noticed in a study recently done by a professor I had at RMIT is that the use of hydrogen technology in conjunction with batteries for long-term storage solutions in a case study for South Australia, for example, actually found that the cost of electricity can be reduced by over 50%, close to 60%. Oh, wow. So there's definitely a place for it. And it's different technologies have different applications, and that's something that we really try and find a niche for when it comes to hydrogen.
And what about implementation? Has it already been implemented in Australia? What about other countries around the world?
So in Australia, we're a little bit slow when it comes to implementing hydrogen. There's quite a large push at the moment, as we do have a lot of natural gas, and that's one strength in, because you can turn natural gas into hydrogen through a process called steam methane reforming.
Okay.
And so that's one way of producing hydrogen. It's actually about 30% cleaner than the world's most efficient coal-fired power plant, which is another strength of the technology. But Australia see themselves as a hydrogen producer and exporter. And then there's countries like South Korea and Japan, which have actually had quite a large push for fuel cells. One thing is fuel cell combined heat and power units are implemented all across Japan. There's about 200,000 units across the country. So residential houses are actually powered by hydrogen, and hydrogen is used for both electricity and heat during the winter. So there is quite a large push. There's also the Toyota Mirai, which is a fuel cell powered car. We've got a refueling station here in Melbourne for the Toyota Mirai, and there's more fuel cell recharging stations popping up all across Australia, including Western Australia. There's a project by ATCO as well, which is another large refueling station looking at hydrogen heavy-duty transport, so trucks and buses.
And as far as the alternate energy space, I read in the responses that you wrote to us that you and Professor Raghu got involved and started a startup called Elysius Energy. And just tell me a bit more about that. What kind of an initiative was that? And are you guys still working and collaborating on that today?
Okay. So the thing about fuel cells is that the concept was discovered in the late 1800s, right? So it's been around for multiple years. And the technology is well developed. There are really no major technological challenges to make them work. The real problem is in the cost. There are certain requirements for certain applications where you want to produce the same amount of power with less weight, less volume, and less cost. Okay, so the ideal situation is where you produce a lot of power with very little weight, very little volume, and very little cost. So while the technology itself has been around and everyone knows how to make fuel cells and how to make it work, to get these parameters is very critical for application success. And we have been playing around with a particular design which has the ability to really increase the amount of power produced per weight, per volume. And also we have identified that this technology could possibly get rid of costly subcomponents of a fuel cell so that the cost also comes down. And that's the reason why we started this company called Elysius, which is housed in the IIT Madras Research Park, the only university-based research park in India currently. And Sam, another student of mine, who's finishing his PhD, Susindran, and myself, we are the three co-founders of this company. We are also the three people in the board of the company. And the company is doing quite well. We have taken up space in Research Park. We have hired more people. And we have also found funding for the company. We continue to collaborate with Sam. We have these meetings via Zoom. We had our board meeting virtually. And Sam, I'm sure, will be very involved in this. We are also looking at how Sam can help take this technology to the Australian market. So the answer is we are very much doing this together, and things are looking quite positive given the climate.
So, despite the complications of the coronavirus, it sounds like you're still able to collaborate and at least exchange ideas remotely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, Sam, tell me a bit about your experience, coming to India to IIT Madras and engaging in these research projects with Professor Raghu, but also leaving with this new initiative that kind of still ties you back to the place.
To say it was life-changing is probably a little bit cliche, but it's definitely an understatement. So I'm fortunate enough to be in a position now where we have quite a large company in Australia that's very interested in our technology. As you know, Australia is quite a large country, and the use of fuel cells in UAVs or drones for longer operation is incredibly valuable. And so we're currently looking to partner with them. And so it's fantastic to be able to collaborate between both India and Australia and bring those two countries together on sort of a research and development or even a business basis. And that all never would have happened if I didn't do the NCP program. So what started out as just a sort of an exchange opportunity snowballed into something a lot bigger. And before that, I never would have had the opportunity to work in hydrogen technology or alternate energy technology. And it was definitely where I sort of found my place and found what I wanted to do. And everything that I'm doing now is a direct result of the NCP program and Professor Raghu.
Both of you kind of talked about, just like Alesius Energy, these new collaborative enterprises and startups in the energy space specifically are very critical to innovation in the field. And I think as we move forward, obviously, there are going to be more initiatives that start popping up in India and Australia, but also maybe bi-coastally. I was wondering if both of you could weigh in on that and, kind of tell me about how maybe scientists just like yourself in India and Australia, to what extent are they already working together and what kind of possibilities are there as we look forward for India and Australia to collaborate in the alternate energy space and what's happening now and kind of what can we look forward to?
After working with Sam and after many years, right now I also have this other position as Dean of Global Engagement at IIT Madras. And in this position, we look at collaborations with universities and companies abroad. And it's really heartening to note that the maximum number of MOUs that we have with universities are in Australia. So we have several MOUs with the universities in Australia. And through this, we are aggressively pursuing mobility of both faculty and students. All of this happens when unlike minds meet and people from different cultures meet. And then you have the synergy that really takes and propels something forward. We are trying to put together a lot more of these in place so that we can do this much more effectively. In fact, the Australian High Commissioner to India visited the campus and we had a discussion with him in terms of all the possibilities that exist in multiple spaces. Alternate energy being one, quantum technology being another, and of course, healthcare as an area, particularly people are much more tuned to this given the COVID situation and otherwise. So there are lots of possibilities, and I think Australia and India are natural partners for many of these initiatives. And I only see this growing from the new vantage point that I am looking at.
Professor Raghu definitely summed it up pretty well. The only thing I could add is just from a student's point of view, one thing I engaged in India was the Carbon Zero Challenge, which I thought was a great initiative by IIT Madras. And it was basically groups of students from all around India got together with a solution to an environmental problem of some sort, working towards, obviously, a carbon zero future. And it was very, very successful, and I was very impressed with the program. And something that I'd like to see happen in Australia, and there's even possibilities for collaboration between the two countries with maybe a Australia-India-wide competition. I think there's definitely a lot of room for growth there, and that would in turn help increase the sort of awareness of India as a STEM, so science, technology, engineering and math country, and partnerships between students. So before I did the NCP program, I was actually very unaware or unfamiliar with India and their engineering background. So that's one thing that I'd like to see grow, is just general awareness amongst students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's also so important, because then it also kind of makes it a more accessible topic in general, and it makes it, how should I say, it kind of demystifies it for younger kids as well, and for people who just aren't really familiar with all the innovation in this space, which I wasn't aware of, but now I am. And the cultural exchange part of it definitely, I feel, maybe brings some kind of fresh perspective, even for someone in a field that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with culture per se, but it kind of always does, though, in a way, I feel.
Absolutely. Just different work ethics and working styles. One thing I was very impressed with the Indian culture is the importance on education. Mm-hmm. Growing up in Western Australia, everyone was in a rush to get their degree and move off to the mines or up north and work in oil and gas. But one thing that was really, really important amongst students that I met in India was doing further studies and pursuing careers in academia and really, really, really making the most of the time that they had when they were young, and just maximizing their education to increase their opportunities, which I thought was very admirable. There's so many opportunities out there that people just aren't aware of, whether it's lack of information on it or they're scared to maybe take the leap. But advice to anyone is just give it a go. You don't know until you give it a shot, and anything can happen, and often it's very, very rewarding.